WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been examining expressions that have originated or caught on in the business world. Today he looks at the expression thought leader.
A while ago, I got an invitation to participate in a workshop on the future of knowledge as part of a group of distinguished thought leaders. Needless to say, I accepted. Thought leader. Nobody ever called me that before. I had half a mind to put it down under occupation the next time I have to fill out a credit application. Unfortunately, it turns out that my new status isn't quite as exclusive or as novel as I'd hoped. The phrase thought leader started its life around 20 years ago as a bit of marketing jargon to describe the sort of people who read magazines like The New Republic or The Atlantic. At its inception, it meant pretty much the same thing as opinion maker, which was the marketing jargon of the previous generation. But over the past few years, the phrase has been spreading itself around much more widely. Now thought leader is used for anybody who pretends to have influence over the way other people think. It's become de rigueur for management consultants to describe themselves as recognized international thought leaders, usually with some phrase like learning communities or change agents within a comma's throw. An insurance company describes itself as a thought leader in long-term care, whatever that might mean, and I found a web page that some consultant had put up that described Socrates as the first thought leader of knowledge management. It also turns out I was scooped on using thought leader as an occupational title. I ran into a job listing for a software company that was looking for a thought leader for its retail sales division and offering a salary in the 100-120 range. They didn't say what the job responsibilities were, but it's a safe bet that PowerPoint came into the picture somewhere. Now, I'm not about to begrudge anybody a job title that commands a six-figure salary. Still, there's something a little clumsy about the phrase. It feels like it should be in German, Gedankenführer. It's an awkwardness that seems to be endemic whenever we try to come up with words to talk about people who traffic in ideas. When thought leader and opinion maker were first introduced, after all, they were just expedients for avoiding the word intelligentsia or intelligentsia, probably because nobody was sure how to pronounce it. There was an article in Newsweek last fall that suggested that we think of thought leaders as something like lay intellectuals, but intellectual is a word with problems of its own. Americans are comfortable using it as an adjective when they're talking about intellectual property or a stimulating intellectual conversation. But when intellectual is used as a noun, it usually conjures up the image of woolly academics swollen with self-importance. It's striking how often the word intellectual is modified by phrases like self-styled and so-called. That was the attitude that George W. Bush was appealing to a while ago when he was answering questions about his poor college grades and his somewhat rudimentary grasp of geography and international politics. "I was never a great intellectual," he said, sounding pretty confident that the American electorate wouldn't hold that failing against him. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Gore was asked to make the same pledge before the campaign is out. The last successful presidential candidate who would have owned up to being an intellectual was Woodrow Wilson, who was president of Princeton back when college teaching and football were both gentlemen's games. Some commentators have been trying to get around this lingering prejudice by making the case for what they call public intellectuals. The phrase is usually associated with a nostalgia for the age of those mid-20th century thinkers who could talk to a wider audience without having clouds of chalk dust issue from their mouth. People like Edmund Wilson, Paul Goodman, and Lewis Mumford, not to mention Clifton Fadiman. Of course, it's likely that Wilson himself would have been dismayed by the phrase public intellectual with its intimations of excessive sociability. But I can understand the desire to make American intellectuals seem sexier, more like the way they're regarded in France. French talk show producers have Rolodexes full of historians and philosophers with Bee Gees hairdos who can appear on a half hour's notice and deliver themselves of exquisitely worded opinions on everything from mad cow disease to gangster rap. They're genuine celebrities, people whom everybody knows by their initials and who don't have to wait for tables in fancy restaurants. The French even have a slang word for intellectuals, intello. That couldn't happen here, where intellectuals are an obscure and dreary class. It would be like having a slang word for chemical engineers. In the end, though, I suspect that the phrase public intellectual is fighting a hopeless rearguard battle. The future belongs to the thought leaders. At least I've noticed that while sociologists and political scientists still like to describe themselves as intellectuals, the business school gurus who command the five-figure speaking fees have gone over to calling themselves thought leaders. That's probably all it takes to put the phrase over the top. In the marketplace of ideas, what matters is being able to move product.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.